Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. We're back in action from last week's special episode with Dan Olson. Dan, again, thanks for stepping in and filling the seat in Wade and Matt's absence. And for those that are going to NAMPI next week, have a great time. You'll see Dan Olson there. And Jean Marie, the CEO of Advise, will be popping in for a day or so as well. So back in action with my two partners in crime, Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the OIG and now a manager on our SIU team, and our payment integrity director, Matt Kachansky, back from travels, vacation, and the like. Matt, the retired special agent in charge from the OIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director. And so today we want to go and we're going to take a step back from talking about cases and kind of an analysis and breakdown. We want to get back to talking about some of the things involving payment integrity and data. We have two very large projects that we're currently working on involving some clients that rely very heavily on data analytics and the tools and tips and tricks that come from data analytics. And you know, one of the things that we're seeing across the spectrum, and we've looked at probably a half a dozen or so different data analytics tools along the way, is that the human-centered design that is with some of the tools sometimes is lacking. The number of clicks, the effort that's required is sometimes a challenge. But you know, in the changing landscape, you need to have data analytics of some sort. Some need more, some need less, but it is a part and parcel of the process that you need to have something. The days of just looking at Excel spreadsheets and the like are kind of gone. You need to have something that gives you actionable intelligence and not just information. Information for the purposes of doing nothing but giving you information bogs you down, and you need to have actionable intelligence. Getting data that doesn't provide you with actionable information is just data. And Wade, you know, you're in this now, and I know how much you love data. And more importantly, I know how much you love playing with data within the technology. You know, I always say you're a black and white guy living in a color world, right? I mean, you just want to go back and, you know, a calculator, an abacus, a pen and a piece of paper, but you know, that's, we have to adapt. And we have to be able to do that. But you know, what I know that you know you're kind of dealing with is this inundation of information that comes out as the result of the data. And so really what it comes down to is when you're playing with all of this data, all of this information, but at what cost? And I think you know the important piece, and kind of you know in the middle, as both someone that's working on our SIU team, but someone who's been in leadership before. And some of the work that you're doing now is kind of to help drive things. So you're kind of in a, you know, quasi leadership role because you're helping to kind of shape where these SIUs are going. And the one thing that always comes to mind always is that with ROI being an important piece of the puzzle and being able to do what you can with what you have, I think we've really got to get away from this whole premise of a discussion of more with less. I think we all agree you can't do more with less. It's just impossible. Can you do the same with less? Maybe. You certainly can't do more with less, because if you could have done more with less, then they would have always had less. But you know, the big issue becomes that when you get to a point where you're so bogged down with looking at data that it essentially becomes paralysis by analysis, because there's so much information there. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, one of the things that you're noticing is, and we see this now a lot, evaluation and management, E&Ms, right? You've got kind of a couple different categories. There's really three categories of E&M. You have new patient, you have existing patient, and then you have your consultation E&Ms, which, you know, we'll call those either the hospital consultation codes or the custodial consultation codes, which is like your SNFs and things of that sort. And there's a big push right now because we know that in the E&M space, the CERT and the PERM audits that are done show an average high error rates consistently in the E&M space. There are some payers out there that are putting out some edicts. We know previously there were some payers who, if you did an E&M with a modifier 25, you were going to have to fax the records in and they were going to have to be reviewed. And that was backed away. There's another payer that's getting ready to start a process where if you submit a claim at a level 4 or level 5, they're going to back it down by one level just based upon the claim itself with no supporting documentation. But the problem becomes, and Wade, we're talking about this, and you just showed us some examples. The argument of upcoding and the thousands and thousands of claim lines, it becomes noise. and it be you become inundated. And I think you're starting to see that pretty frequently. How are you? So first of all, how are you even sifting through that data, if you even can? And then the other kind of collateral question is, what do you do with this information? Does it become noise? Does it become actionable? What do you do with it? Because you can always do a couple of things. You can ignore it. That is something. You can seek to vet out each one of these potential upcoding issues, or some hybrid of them. How are you guys dealing with some of the data overload that you're currently seeing?
Yeah, well, there's a couple different categories we're looking at, and they'll categorize them as alerts versus leads. And we're trying to get, it kind of seems obvious what they are, but we're trying to get definitions so we can really tell the difference between what they are, because they're in the tools that you approach it differently, and it's just a different animal. But just as an example, like we were talking about before this podcast, one of the alerts deals with upcoding E&M codes 99213 through 99215. And the way they gather the data on these, I think a lot of it is AI generated. But basically, you get a tool that, just for example, one of the main alerts, it's got an alert number to it. It's got a hyperlink, so you can click on that and see the text of how the alert was. What it's based on. And then you have the number of claims. And this one that I was sharing with you guys, 99213 to 99215 E&Ms, for this alert, there's 136,000 claim lines, 136,000. And of course, there's a hyperlink to that where you can go and you can look at each claim. If you have time to look at 136,000 lines, they're all there. Beyond that, it also shows the number of providers that basically hit on this alert. So those 136,000 claims represent claims from 5,700 some odd providers. Again, it's hyperlinked. You can go to that hyperlink and it'll list all 5,000 providers who hit on this. But then when you look at their provider page, it has, again, it's information overload. Everything you could possibly want to know about the provider, from geographic area to, there's a data link, there's everything is there. But the problem is, somebody looks at that and says, okay, here's all the data, here's the tool. Why don't you pull out cases that we can work off of this? And it's just like, I'm struggling with, oh, I just had a B there, sorry. Struggling with trying to get something actionable out of this, this list of 136,000 claims and 5,000 providers. Data overload. You really
Right.
can't, in this, say, okay, I'm going to pull cases out of this. Now, similarly
And
to
that's one
that,
alert out of how many?
you're right.
Right. Yeah.
Thousands, right?
Right. And
And
wait,
that,
so just not to cut you off too much, but the issue in the E&M world now, 2021, the guidelines changed. E&Ms are not inherently connected to time anymore. They're based upon that medical decision making. And so I think the problem that I have, that I have trouble grasping, and I talk to people in this industry every day, all day. I talk to our auditors, I talk to other great people in the fraud, waste, abuse, compliance space. If you go to a specialist, there's a really good chance that you're going to be able to have a level four visit from a specialist because of that medical decision making. And the time factor drops to the wayside when you're talking about medical decision making. Now, obviously, if you have a provider who's billing for 24 hours to a particular payer, and you only have purview to that one particular payer, there's probably some issue there because you're talking about one payer. If you're talking about some plan and they've got 24 hours worth of billings for Dr. Rubenstein, and that's just one plan, there's probably a greater issue out there. But the problem is that what becomes that defining line? Is 24 hours based on time? But if what if the provider's seeing 40 people Is 40 people an unreasonable number? Is 30, is 50? I don't know what the answer is. I mean, that's really what the ongoing question is. That, you know, the question I always seem to ask is, when a provider is billing for greater than 24 hours, if that's your benchmark, what's the plus factor? And at the end of the day, part of that medical decision making still includes non-direct care from the provider, right? It also includes the nurse coming in, the medical assistant coming in, things that the nurse, the medical assistant is going to take some notes. The nurse may take some notes. And so while you might say, hey, it is not possible for the provider of the service to render 24 hours worth of services, you've got a whole bunch of things that are going to come into play before the doctor even walks in the room and talks to you. And so the question that I constantly struggle with is, what's that plus factor and how do you root out that noise? And the problem is the data by itself doesn't really help you with that. So you're left with 137,000 claim lines to kind of figure out. And that 137 or 50 or 200,000 claim lines, it could be for hundreds of doctors, hundreds of providers, right?
About this one, 5,000, almost 6,000. So right. Yeah, the numbers are just like, it gives you like we talk about like an executive level, high level review. It'll give you that hot, very high level review where you can see how many fall into this alert category. But again, going back to something actionable to open cases and work the cases, not based on these alerts. Now in the leads, it's a little bit different because it's more provider specific and more allegation specific. Right. But even those, there's,
right,
you know, you have to call through several thousand right. of them anyways.
So it's just, it's data overload. So Matt, that gets to you. By the way, Matt, I'm really liking the George Hamilton look from your vacation week. I'm really appreciating the George Hamilton look, or, you know, maybe there's other people. And if people don't know George Hamilton, there's other people that we won't make this a real conversation about, but there's people that are currently in the news every day who have a little bit of an orange hue to them, and that is not dissimilar. But so Matt, you know, Wade brought up a good point, and we talked about this. You know, there's really, when you get right down to it, you've got alerts, you've got leads, you've got cases. Those are the three broad categories, and you bucketed those. You know, we've had a couple of calls about this, and you bucketed those. And I think, you know, when you and I were talking about this, alerts, in my mind, and I think you agreed with this, alerts are kind of points of reference to give the SIU community or that payer's SIU or payment integrity team information that may not be actionable, but it's really more informational. In my mind, an alert is, hey, plan, we're noticing a spike in CPT code 1000. We're noticing that providers last year only billed for CPT code 1000 at this level of frequency, but this year there's a spike. Your policy indicates that CPT 1000 should only be billed twice per year for a patient, but we're noticing instances of it being multiple times. To me, that's an alert. It's, hey, we're noticing a trend in the data. Do you want to do something about it? Do you want to monitor it? Like, just informational, right? Leads become, hey, this alert resulted in this provider being an outlier. Here's the information about this particular provider vis-a-vis this alert. This alert is there because we believe that there's a level or potential level of inconsistency with policy. Here's a lead for a provider that may fall outside of that standard. And then, oh, hey, investigator, do your work, and then it becomes a case. And so part of it is there has to be a greater coordination between the payment integrity team, which is going to include them having policies that the data analytics team can ingest and put to action, the SIU team being able to ferret through the noise and come up with what cases are. And, you know, the thing that we're noticing is that when we go back to the provider of the data tool, what we don't get are clear answers to a lot of the things that come up, meaning what are we supposed to do with this alert? What's your false positive rate? What's this? What's that? So that coordination has to be like intrinsic to the ability to get through the noise to decide, is this just an alert? Is it informational? Is it a lead or is it a case?
And there's a fourth one. And this is where the coordination comes in, is why would I care? Why is this important to my plan? This is where the coordination is. What are my areas of vulnerability? What are my priority areas in my particular plan, in my geographic region? What are the things I'm seeing as really compromising our program integrity, our plan integrity? So I can do away with 95% of these alerts and leads because, yeah, they're nice, but I want to focus my limited resources on not going through 10,000 pieces of dirt to get to the one gem. I want to be able to get to that gem a lot quicker so I can put the resources into then investigating those gems.
Right.
So I'm going to be working with that data analytics tool manufacturer, distributor, whatever you want to call them, to say, these are the things I'm interested in. I'm not interested in E&M upcodes. I'm interested in X, Y, and Z because we're seeing these things happen a lot.
Right.
And I want you to prioritize and risk score these things so that they pop up to the top of the list so we don't have to cull through all of this junk to get to them.
And you know the and the thing that's interesting about that, Matt, is you've got these different categories of things, but I mean, generally speaking, for a provider to be an outlier, there could be a million different factors that come into play. But you know, the ones that seem to be the more solid ones are when you have, I'll call it strict liability, right? The policy says you can only bill for this thing twice a year, and anything beyond twice a year may be denied as medically unnecessary. It's a strict liability. No medical records need to be reviewed. I mean, we get asked all the time, how can we, in the payment integrity space, how can we work on cases in which we do not have to request medical records? And there, I could think of a small group of things that would not require medical records where you can actually make some determinations based upon data. That you know would get you to that spot. And I think I've got a pretty good list of things in my head that would stand up to scrutiny, that say in the absence that are in that strict liability.
And
And
then
the and
the question then is that an SIU issue or is that a program
well,
integrity issue that
that's
another arm can handle?
so that's exactly where I'm going, is that if you've got a policy in place that is a strict liability policy that says, you know, and I'll give you a very actionable one. We worked on a project here a couple of years ago. OIG, Office of Evaluation Inspection, did a study, and they identified instances where providers were rendering more than five facet joint injections on a patient for a region of the back, outside of a rolling 12-month period. So the CMS policy, which wasn't great, there were mostly LCDs, but you know, we'll take it as it is, where it says, you can only do in a 12-month rolling period only five for a region. Anything more than five is considered medically unnecessary, strict liability. And what OAS did, or OE&I did, was they did a study, they identified a bunch of providers, and then they OSIG then got involved and it became a double damages case. And it was absolute strict liability. They didn't look at a single medical record. And they, quite frankly, they just did their analysis and then sent double damage overpayment letters to providers that were part of that study. And then CMS then sent out an overall request to all of the MACs, telling the MACs to instruct all the providers in their jurisdictions to self-audit and then make overpayments. And so you have a strict liability case right there. The policy says anything more than this is considered an overpayment. That's not alert. That's a lead, ultimately a case. But at the end of the day, does that have to go to the SIU? Does that go to utilization management medical review? And I think we would agree that's not an SIU case. There are no medical records being looked at. There isn't a potential fraud, waste, abuse issue. It might be an abuse issue. It might be a waste issue, but it's not the F
Right.
issue. And so that becomes part of it. And that's filtering out that noise. But you know, at the end of the day, that coordination, meaning, is the plan providing the data analytics tool with the most updated policies that they have? Do they have, because it's not just the days of NCCI edits, MUE edits, it's way beyond that, right? You've got plan edits, you've got policy considerations, regulatory considerations. You might have something that the line of business doesn't cover it, but another line of business might. You have to know that. The analytics tool has to be able to adjust for that. But I think that what we're currently seeing is this unbelievable overload. And it's a little bit, and I know we've talked about this before, Matt, and I'll give you the final word on this, is be careful what you wish for. Payers need data analytic tools. And the problem is that, and we see this, is the payer gets the tool, the switch comes on, and there's no dimmer switch. It's floodlights in the jail at midnight when you're trying to sleep. There's no dimmer switch.
We've talked about it before. Data lies. We know that. I think it also kills, because, wait, how many people would it take to go through those alerts and those leads to identify what you would then need to investigate?
Yeah.
You can't
impossible,
get to it.
Right, wait.
I so mean, you're the SIU.
It. Right.
Because you spent all the other time trying to dredge through that stuff. You and can't do it.
And at the end of the day, the definition of the alert has to be well defined. And, you know, I think what we would say from our perspective is an alert is a overarching statement about trends that are being seen in the data as the result of the analytics. And those alerts can turn into a lead, and that lead can turn into a case. But there has to be this kind of pecking order of what's important and what's noise. 5,000 providers for hundreds of thousands of claim lines in whatever that short, and I know it was a short period of time, you can't deal with that. It's impossible. So what do you do? Do you then say, okay, anybody who is a specialist, we're going to filter out? But then you've got providers who are even subspecialists, right? I'm an ophthalmologist. I never bill for retinal-related services. I now hire a doctor who's a retinal specialist, right? My E&Ms now, I spike on that because now my NPI for my group is showing this higher level of E&Ms. If I'm an internal medicine doctor, should I really be billing a lot of fours and fives? Probably not. I'm an internal medicine doctor. You're seeing a lot more of the routine kind of things. But as a specialist, maybe you're billing at a level four. Maybe you are billing at a level five. So the problem is that you look at that data and you find that there's 5,000 providers billing for level fours and level fives. What do you do with that information? What do you do with 5,000 identified providers who may be upcoding? The other piece of the puzzle then becomes, what made them outliers in the upcoding? Was it that they were billing levels two and three months ago, and now all of a sudden they're billing fours and fives? Were they billing threes and fours last month, but now they're billing fours and fives? Like, I think, and the problem is that you can get mired in to spending your day trying to filter out that noise to the actionable things. So, Matt, I'll give you the last word.
Data
well-defined,
is
well-defined, yeah. Well-defined parameters.
Well-defined, well-coordinated, and then well-filtered by people so that what you're getting is only the information you need as an SIU to be able to pick from a few leads the numbers of cases that you have the resources to fully investigate. Other than that, it's a waste. All of that information is just accumulating in the background and becoming more and more of a trash heap for you to have to pick through to try and find, you know, the one gem.
Because then at the end of the day, Wade has spent an entire day clicking on a lot of things, and has the ball moved 1 yard? Not even close. Because he's just spent an entire day trying to figure out, of the 5,000 leads for this upcoded E&M, whatever it is, of the 5,000, how many could you get through from the data, and what is it really telling you? So they're really, you know, I think while we're getting better at data ingestion, data analysis. We're getting better at it. I still think that at the end of the day, the plans need to, there has to be a better coordination between the plans, the analytic tools, and it's not that they're bad. It could always be better. And it's not always the plan's fault. It's not always the analytic team's fault. There has to be, you know, some bridge between those two to talk about that. And then at the end of the day, when Wade McFowell is sitting there with when Wade is sitting there with 5,000 doctors who build for level 4 and level 5 E&Ms, you have to be able to go to the company that produced that result and say, how do I filter this down? Because otherwise you're just giving me information. It's not, nothing happens with it. So this is a tough topic. And, you know, the thing is, you need data analytics. You need a tool. There are a lot of tools out there, and every tool is going to do a little bit of a different thing. Maybe they do the same thing. Maybe some of them have a better human-centered design than others. Maybe some are less chunky or clunky or clickier, you know, than the others. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got to have something that gives you something that you can really do something with. Otherwise, it all becomes noise, and then you wind up doing nothing, right? It's like it's like nailing your foot down, running around for 8 hours and being, boy, I'm so tired. Look what I did all day. And all you did was run around in a circle. There has to be something a little bit more to it. So coordination with these tools is get your money's worth, right? That's at the end of the day, the payers spend a lot of money on these tools. And at the end of the day, what you want to see is, are you using this tool to the most of what you're paying for and not, you know, some smaller version of it. But at the same time, is the tool listening to you?
Right.
And getting you, you know, what you need. So Wade, good luck with those 5,000 leads. We don't pay overtime, so good luck with that. and you know, and sifting through it. But look, for those of you that watch this podcast on a weekly basis, we talk about these kind of things all the time, and we don't have any of the answers. We have some answers. We have a lot of questions, and we have a lot of things that create food for thought that we think at the end of the day, you go back to your vendors, your internal team, your external partners, all of that, and have these conversations. You know, we see them from the inside. We see them from our experience at, you know, Wade, Matt and I at the OIG, we have another handful of people that are behind the scenes, former OIG program people, agents and the like. A lot of people have come to us from the Blues, the UPICs. We try to bring that really, really granular level of subject matter expertise. And we're finding that these are things that are really out there. And whether or not they're actionable today or they're actionable tomorrow, there is some probative value to asking these questions to your internal stakeholders, your external stakeholders, and just as much the vendors that you're paying to do this work. So, you know, we appreciate the feedback. A lot of these conversations, and this one in particular, came as the result of conversations that we've had both internally and externally. So we appreciate all the feedback. We've got, again, some great stuff coming up in the future. We've got another LinkedIn Live coming up. Dan Olson and I will be doing a part two in September. We'll be doing a part two on data analytics and talking about some of these issues, but also we're going to be talking a little bit more in depth about creating the models that the analytics tools ultimately help with creating some of that. So we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive on the analytics and some of that. And again, the newsletter every Friday comes out. Every Thursday in LinkedIn, we deploy our OIG roundtable. So we appreciate everybody sharing it, all the commentary. Good to see you guys as always. We're back in action. Summer's over, back to work. And thanks for coming, and we'll see everybody on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you all.